I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive insights on how to live a longer and healthier life. Today we begin our program with a study from Harvard Medical School and the University of Tromsø in Norway. It's a simple issue. It's vitamin D. But here's what's important about this. We know for certain that the longer the telomeres, that's the end caps of chromosomes, and the longer they're held and bound together, much like the end of your shoelace, that little plastic tip, when that becomes unraveled, then it's hard to lace your shoes. Same with your cells, meaning that when those telomeres unravel and shorten, the chromosomes are exposed and they begin to be damaged, and ultimately they die. Senescence. Hence, the takeaway message is simple. The longer the telomeres, the longer you live, or that particular organ lives. Now, depending upon our lifestyle, we can have one organ that's fine and another organ that's not. I'll give you a good example of this. Many of us are long-distance runners, and we train to do marathons, ultramarathons, 30K, 50K races, and it takes a lot of wear and tear on the body. None of that is healthy. Now, so why would I advocate of healthy choices? Why would I advocate for doing these? Because in life, it's important that at some point we challenge ourselves in ways that we have not before. If for nothing else, to develop a new sense of discipline and to say, okay, I'm at a certain age, I have certain goals, and one of those is how far can I push myself within reason and benefit from it? What lessons will I learn? And that's one of the reasons that I believe in athleticism. Now, for the average person, training 4 miles a day, power walking, jogging, would be terrific. Biking 10 to 20 miles a day in resistance gear, so it's hard, that's terrific. Doing about a half hour of resistance exercises, sit-ups, push-ups, lifting dumbbells, barbells, terrific. But going beyond 4 miles a day, you're entering a different zone. You are putting stress upon different telomeres in the body, different muscles in the body. And as a result, you have a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you're going to lower your pulse rate in most cases. Let's say it's normally 75 beats per minute. If you can get it down to 60, you've added years onto your life, more than a decade, to the heart. If you don't smoke, you've added years onto your lungs and your heart. If you don't drink, you've added years onto your liver and kidneys, your brain. If you're constantly challenging your brain, you're seeking ways to stimulate critical thinking. Maybe you like to go to the opera, which is very important because not only do we enjoy the opera, but it's like sitting in on a master chess game. You know, if you're playing it, you're having to move many moves in advance in your mind. It challenges you. It causes your brain to stay younger. Critical thinking does that. Reading complex material does that. Learning a new language does. Playing an instrument does it. But also deep meditation does it as well. So the key is in life, use to the fullest all of your resources. Take advantage of that which challenges you. When my buddy, we trained for over 10 years together every day, Franco Pantone, outstanding race walking coach, one of the best in America, and one of the best athletes, power walking. I mean, he's terrific, won hundreds of races. And one day we were training for the Los Angeles Marathon, the first Los Angeles Marathon, and we knew all the best race walkers were going to be there. And Marianne Torrellis, I mean, these are legends within the field. But we also knew that the Mexican team was coming up, and they train at 5,000 feet altitude. So they may have a shorter stature, but their legs move faster. It's like, if you watch them, it's like watching an old-fashioned egg beater where you turn it and these blades turn around. That's how their legs look. And so we said, okay, we've got to challenge ourselves. We have to get out of any comfort zone. So every morning when we go into Central Park, we'd run for about 12 miles. But in the running, we would find what are called rabbits. These are people, they're just as skinny as can be. They look like little reeds. You know, maybe a guy weighs 120 pounds, and for him, that's heavy. But these guys are fast. And there'll be a couple running together, maybe at a four-minute pace, and Franco and I are trying to stay behind him as for as long as we can, maybe 4:50 to 5 minute, 5:10 pace. And it really hurt. It wasn't easy. But then you see, well, what's the problem? Well, your lungs are the problem. So then we run up 25 flights of stairs 25 times. That then helps lung capacity. So everything we could do to compensate, we did. As a result, I won a gold, and I think Franco won a bronze. But we always trained with people who were faster. In the process, when we would take our blood pressure and pulse rate, it was generally around 49 to 50 beats per minute. Now, that's rather ideal. Blood pressure was normal low, and that's ideal. And a healthy diet kept the arteries clean, and all the different vegetables, and all the green vegetables in particular, and vitamin C, kept the blood naturally thin, less likelihood of a clot. So it didn't make you immune from a problem, it made you less susceptible. So what is the moral of the story? The moral of the story is that for those of us who were training beyond what was considered normal, our blood pressure was better, our heart rate was better, our muscles, abs, you could see, no excess body fat, clarity of thinking, good feelings because of the endorphins that are secreted like a natural opiate when you run. And that's why it's very important to get out there and do your aerobic, because you can have just a better sense of well-being, lighter, for probably the next 6 to 8 hours. If you do that twice a day, almost your entire day is taken up with feeling much better versus being sedentary. Now, that only works for a period of time. And then what you do, you prematurely age those muscles. Now, your heart's not prematurely aged. And if you've taken your vitamin C and quercetin, coenzyme Q10 and calcium magnesium and other nutrients, L-carnitine, vitamin E and their tocotrienols and hawthorn berry, you've strengthened your heart. But the muscles, not so much. And here's what we found, that most athletes who do not compensate for the stress and premature aging of their muscles end up at some point, probably after 10, even 15 years, they can't go out and do the same run. They might be able to jog, but they can't race because they didn't compensate. So I call it the laws of compensation. To the degree that anything is happening in your life that creates an imbalance, you have to compensate by rebalancing it. And therefore, it makes a huge difference. That's why I told all my friends, nurses and physicians working in hospital during COVID, make sure that every day you build up your immune system. And that way, if you are infected, you're less likely to get as sick, less likely to be hospitalized, and less likely to die. And that is what the actual science showed. So the key is compensation. So when you are wanting to live a longer life, compensate by taking vitamin D, because according to the study from Harvard Medical School and the University of Tromsø, it lengthens the telomeres, and the longer the telomeres, the longer the life. Now, I was still a competitive racer. I just did this Florida State Championship, set a record in the 2 mile, and took the gold in the 3,000 meter. So I'm still competing. The difference is I'm not doing marathons now. I've done 84 marathons. I've done over 500 races, competitive races. So I don't have to push my body to that level. So I can train under 6 miles a day and be in great shape and be competitive. And because of my diet and supplementation, stretching and taking my body's chemistry on a regular basis, I'm actually deaccelerating the aging process, meaning I'm slowing down the aging process. Well, if you slow down the aging process, what else are you slowing down? The diseases of premature aging. So therefore, again, it does not make you immune. It makes you less susceptible, big time less susceptible. So it's all about being able to pay attention to your health. Now, I check my blood pressure 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I check my pulse just to make sure it's even. Because stress can cause a disruption in the electrical charge to your heart. Therefore, people are not even aware that their heart is not beating the way it should. And so this way, you're aware that how to deal with stress. And so, okay, there's something stressful I have to deal with. I don't want to stress myself and disrupt my biochemistry, especially the heart, in the process. So when you know you're facing stressful situations, take a break, take a respite, and meditate. Bring yourself down, deep breathing. Put on a soothing CD. Maybe I happen to like Rainfall on a Tin Roof. It just chills you out instantly. It's great for you. Helps you go to sleep if you're having trouble sleeping. But the more relaxed you are, the healthier biochemistry inside. Next up is a study from the University of Porto in Brazil. It says that acai pulp can improve antioxidant defense and protect your arteries. Now, we know that pomegranate protects your arteries. That's why eating pomegranates or taking the concentrate sugar-free or the juice sugar-free is really good for your heart and good for the epithelium, the inner lining of your arteries and your veins. And you don't want those prematurely aged because that's where clotting occurs, blockages occur. That can increase your blood pressure as well. So supplementing your diet, especially healthy women, with the acai pulp improves your antioxidants, but it also decreases the markers for oxidative stress. For example, when you go out, let's just say you go for a 6 mile light run, that's good for you, good for you. But it also is bad for you because you've created extra oxidative stress. The inhaling and exhaling, when breathing, the exchange of oxygen for carbon dioxide coming out, that creates oxidative stress. That oxidative stress creates free radicals. Free radicals then attack cells. So we have about 10,000 to 12,000 gene alterations in every cell in the body per day. And that's much of that is because of oxidative stress. So, according to the article published in Clinical Nutrition, if you're taking just one item, you're able to reduce the oxidative stress. That means you're reducing free radicals. And that helps protect against the formation of plaques and arteries. And so it's not a lot. It's like 200 grams per day. And that's about around 6 ounces a day. So that's important. Now, also, what if before you went off that run, you took 100 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, 400 milligrams or units of vitamin E, and took 200 of thiocotrienols? How about taking 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 1,000 milligrams of quercetin? And how about taking some cayenne, one capsule of high heat unit cayenne? How about taking 300 milligrams or have a glass of coconut water and have 400 milligrams of potassium? How about taking some calcium magnesium? Well, then you've reduced your oxidative stress tremendously because as you're creating it, the body has so many antioxidants that are trapping those free radicals. Now, when you finish your workout, do it again. Now, your compensation before and after have allowed you the benefit of all the physical activity in the body, but also without the premature aging. Hence, the rules of compensation. So let's help our arteries. Let's help them stay healthy. And that one fruit does it. And it reduces the pro-inflammatory cytokines while restoring functional cellular antioxidant status. And just eating a normal diet will not do it. It's spelled several ways. It's pronounced several ways. S-E-I, S-I, A-C-A-I. I repeat, A-C-A-I. Okay? When I was down in South America, they pronounce it one way. We pronounce it a different way. And by the way, how to sleep better without meds? Soak in more daylight outdoors, even if it's cloudy. University of Washington. It's a popular question among Americans because they're so tired. In fact, they have to artificially stimulate their energy, the ACT, adenosine triphosphate, in the morning with coffee. That's not healthy. That's not good. So how can you sleep better without turning to the meds? The answer could be something as simple as getting outside. Getting outside for at least a little while and soaking in some daylight light, even if it's cloudy, can help us sleep soundly at night. That's the new research, University of Washington. And they measured sleep in undergrad students and observed they tend to fall asleep especially late and wake up later in the morning during winter. And that's when we have the fewest amount of hours of sunlight. So for those of you living where there's plenty of sunlight, Nevada, California, Texas, Florida, Georgia, then get sunlight. Nevada, especially, get sunlight each day. Okay? Make a difference when you're sleeping at night, because it impacts your circadian rhythms. And that's good. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for watching this. And we're going to take a break and come back and go after a lot of interesting topics. Always go to GaryNall.com. If for no other reason, go to the essays or my commentaries, because I take on all these issues. I take on in a critical way, critical mass theory. I take on the woke. I take on the imbeciles who are running our equity programs. I take them all on. 57 commentaries I did last year alone. That was more than one per week. And I'm going to do the same this year. All right? Back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. One of the ways that we can feel oppressed is when people use words that have been weaponized against us. When people choose to insult you, berate you, belittle you, make you feel bad about just being alive, this is a form of institutional bullying that's going on, has for some time. For example, they'll say information that they disagree with is all disinformation. Can't be trusted. And now there are hundreds of different organizations that are in the business of monitoring everything that you write and say. And if you step over that line and you say anything they disagree with, maybe you have a question about our financial policies, about our war in Ukraine, about COVID, well, then they put you on a list. Now, we know this because this has all come out. This has all been shown with Twitter. And Matt Taibbi, having done a series showing that this is actually what they think. All the governmental agencies, all of them, were working in tandem to control virtually all of the media platforms. There was a case where Matt Taibbi was saying that there was an effort by one of the California legislators, member of the House, to censor anyone who criticized him. And yet he is a pathological personality. And he lies constantly, but they all do. How they get away with it? Because the deep state is controlling everything, and they're using Google, Facebook, Wikipedia, Twitter, and they did this, and anyone who challenged it for years, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, you were actually accurate. But did the media cover it? No. Did it show its own complicity in being self-censoring? No. Purely political and purely ideological. People want to control us. So they start saying you can't say words like, now the new rule is that you can't say mother, father, brother, sister, aunt, uncle. You can't say that. You can't say male and female. They want to change that in all the dictionaries because they say there is no such thing as a biological man or a woman. That's insane. It's purely insane. Now, we have millions of scientists. Where are they speaking up? I understand why professors, with few exceptions, won't speak up because they're cowards, all right? And they're afraid that some idiot 17-year-old is going to come in and say, I feel like my life is threatened because you just said a word that I don't understand. But if I don't understand, it means it's a threat to me. So I'm going to file a Title IX against you. Good professors, ones who've informed, educated, and prepared a person for the real world, are now compromised. So everyone is dumbing down. Everyone is playing, okay, if you say there's no such thing as a biological male and female, and we should erase man and woman from our vocabulary, mother from our vocabulary. They want to erase male. Can't use the word male. What happens when good people stay silent? Well, one person who's not staying silent is Neil Oliver. He's a historian. He's a philosopher. He's from Scotland. And he just has a lightness of being about him. He takes on really serious topics, goes into depth on them, and it's a pleasure to be able to share some of his views. I don't agree with a lot that he says, but he says enough that I do believe that we would benefit from listening to, especially when it comes to what they're doing with words. Okay? And these people have contributed nothing to make life better for any of us. They seem to be perpetually angry. They're like spoiled brats. And yet, not only do we tolerate this, but we're actually allowing them to dictate college curriculums. What does it tell you also when a school board and those who select the curriculum and the books choose to keep it secret from the parents, and they're going to use this to indoctrinate your children? Since when is it okay for parents not to have a say-so in their children's education? How something is taught, what is taught? I chose not to play a clip because I found it so offensive and I felt other people in the audience would also be offensive. It was and I want to give me feedback on this because we have the clip. I'm not going to play it. You can see it for yourself. It's up on the internet. It's where a group packed young children, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, were being entertained by a drag queen. I don't care. You know, be a drag queen, not. That's your business. Your sexual preference and orientation, that's your business. You know, it's for your freedom of choice. But it's what he said at the end that really concerned me. And he said the following, and again, I apologize for having to use this, but this is what is actually out there. And all the parents were applauding this. He was talking about himself and what the children should kiss. You get the message. Wow. Since when did that become acceptable? So I believe that people should be challenging the curriculum. I believe teachers, and there are a lot of good teachers in this country, but I'm against their unions because I see how utterly, utterly captured they are. So if you're a parent, you care whether or not your children are taught some of these things based upon you being excluded, you having no input or say-so. And if you do decide to say so, the FBI considers you a domestic terrorist. Is that right? How do we get to where our Justice Department is spending more time and energy going after parents who committed no crime but represent a more serious threat than a murderer, a rapist, a gangbanger on the streets of New York? And that's what's happened. In fact, you're more likely not to be arrested and to get right out on no bail if you commit a serious crime than if you're a parent that is arrested at a meeting because you're speaking out, even the truth. I just saw a clip where a guy was starting to read from a textbook that is given to children, and he was stopped and said, "You can't read that." "Why not?" And one of the members of the board said, "He hasn't said anything that's vulgar. He hasn't offended anyone. He's just reading from a textbook. Why can't he do that?" "No, I'm the board member. I'm the board chair, and I'm saying no." So the man said, "You mean it's okay for all of our children to read this and have this emphasized that this is good, and yet I can't even speak it to you adults, and yet it's okay for children?" And so they had to stop the meeting and have a vote of whether or not the person should be allowed to continue. That is how political and ideological our systems have become, our institutions have become. So when you can control education, you can control a person's perception of reality. When you alter history, when you alter the way that we look at life and people and races, then you can control that person. They become almost a member of a cult. And for those of us who are educators, and I've been an educator for my entire adult life, New School for Social Research, Pratt Institute, Fairleigh Dickinson University, etc., I've never seen this before. Now it's everywhere, at every institution, and you should be concerned. because they represent a minority of the people, these woke critical race theory people, but they have power because the media is accepting it without challenge and not allowing debates, discussion, but even making it against the law to be critical of something that needs to be challenged. So we're going to go to Neil Oliver right now, and then I'd like your input. Please call in at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, tomorrow and the next day, we're not on BAI because from, I think it's 6 in the morning till 6 at night, 12 hours, the station cannot, unfortunately, pay its payroll, according to the email that was sent out by Linda and Bertel. And so we will not be on BAI tomorrow or the next day. And I just want to let you know, so if you tune in and you hear fundraising, you can always go to prn.live, prn.live, and listen in. Okay? Now to the clip of Neil Oliver.
I was thinking about words and how they're being tampered with. They're not exactly taking them away, but words are being given alternate meanings, and they're being overused and misused. You know, words like, pronouns. Let's start there. They, them, he, she, her, him, all of that stuff that's going on. We know what those words mean. We know what he means, and we know what she means. You know, we know what her and him and they and them. They've got meanings that they've had for hundreds of years. But now we're being invited or even coerced into using them differently. We're being asked to apply them subject to a person's own choice, that I could choose to be she or her, and a woman could choose to be him and his. I don't get this, because it's just the outer edge of the misuse of language, and it causes people to trip up. People make mistakes, inevitably, around the whole gender debate. It's deliberately set traps. I don't really trust the extent to which it's meant to help anyone. I think, on the contrary, it's supposed to catch the unwary. It's to make us feel as if, because we don't comprehend what's going on and we're too frightened to open our mouths in certain circumstances for fear of making the kind of mistake that can draw down all sorts of abuse and criticism. And this is happening across the piece. Words like racist are being misapplied. Anything and everything is racist now. Transphobe is being misused. Transphobe specifically and precisely means someone with a hatred of or a fear of trans people. That's what that means. But if you open your mouth in the context of that debate, there are all manner of innocent things that a person can say that will have them labelled as transphobic. Misogynist is out there. Everything's misogyny, especially in relation to the trans debate. Right wing. Now, anyone that's my age knows what right wing used to mean. But anything and everything is right wing now. Anything and everything is racist. The English countryside is racist. Being good at maths is racist, according to the new orthodoxy. And if you think that doesn't make sense, and if you think you're going mad because you don't get it, it's because that's precisely what it's supposed to do. It's sold as though it's making easier the lives of others, minorities, but it's not. That's not why it's happening. It's there specifically to catch out the likes of us, and better yet, to make us just not talk about things. It's easier to be silent than to risk making a career-ending mistake in the context of certain debates. And there's nothing trivial about this, because words, you know, the word that two-volume dictionary there, and indeed the full fat multi-volume Oxford English Dictionary, it contains well over 500,000 words, and they are the foundation of how we communicate with one another. And our ability to communicate in that way is uniquely human. Being able to have a shared understanding of the meanings of words is the basis upon which we build conversations and relationships and society and civilization. It all comes from being able to have a shared understanding of words. It comes right down to having a shared reality. You know, once upon a time when I was growing up, there was just reality. There was an understanding of the world around us. People had a more in-depth and a shallower understanding, let's say, of reality, but we were all living in the same reality. But now it feels that there are multiple realities rubbing along uncomfortably besides one another. And you can't just take it for granted that the person that you bump into is any longer living in the same reality as you. And that which gets lost in the translation between those two realities is yet another way in which people, or another reason for people feeling less inclined to engage, for fear of saying the wrong thing. That our definitions of male and female, man and woman, boy and girl are being changed out from under our feet is not trivial, and it's not to be taken lightly. And so I've developed this, it's almost a fantasy really. You know, I had pointed these out. My wife got these in a local Oxfam bookshop. Oxfam bookshops are fantastic because you get all sorts of old publications, old volumes that you would be able to find them online, of course you would, but you know, broadly speaking, those secondhand bookshops are absolute gold mines now, because this was published in 1979, I think, this edition. And I feel I can trust that. I feel it dates to a period before the madness settled in. And increasingly I'm looking for old books, books from the time before. And it's not just books. If I could make my fantasy a reality, I would have an aircraft hangar full of old books, old films. Old films, actually canisters of film. And I would have old VHS and even old DVDs, and I would just stockpile them, because where you have the physical entity, the book, the LP, the long playing record, or the music cassette, or the VHS tape, or the Betamax, or the DVD, or the mini disc, or whatever, you've got it in your hands, and that which you have now is not going to be altered without you knowing about it. And I would fill shelves and warehouses full of old stuff to put it beyond the reach of change. Because if you get all of your music from Spotify or some other streaming service, and if you get all of your films, even watching old films on a streaming platform like Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, I'm telling you now, you've got no way of knowing if the version you are watching is the version that was the concept of the director. Let's say it's a film from the 40s or the 50s or the 70s or the 90s. You've got no way of knowing, as you watch it on one of those streaming platforms, that you're watching the unadulterated original. And I know that sounds like another conspiracy theory, but it preoccupies me that in 100 years' time, if you were to buy a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird, or if you were to get it on your Kindle or whatever platform you're reading it on, or if you were to have it as an audiobook, you'd have no way of knowing. You might not even question whether you were getting the story that Harper Lee meant to tell. Because in these corrupted, perverted times, a story like that could be altered for all sorts of reasons, because it deals with race at the basis of it. And if To Kill a Mockingbird, if Harper Lee's narration of that idea that she had in her head, if it's no longer deemed morally appropriate, if it doesn't tick the boxes of today's morality, it could be altered, edited, changed, and you wouldn't even know it. So I'm increasingly, my wife lives in fear of what I'm going to buy next, because I stack around me as many copies of old books as I can get my hands on, because I want to know that they're safe. And I want to know that the words that are in them are in the original order that the author had in mind. And if I buy old films, it's because I want to reassure myself that if it's a film directed by John Huston, then it remains the film that John Huston oversaw and put out for a viewing audience. I don't want some sanitised, altered, edited, corrupted version of it. And so what I'm thinking about now is that if it's like Fahrenheit 451, you know, the sci-fi novel about a time when books are being burned. Fahrenheit 451 is the temperature at which paper combusts. And it becomes incumbent upon people to take care of stories because they're being deleted, they're being taken away. And so that's my clarion call, because books and films and music are some of the bedrock of our civilization, and ultimately they're made out of words. And words and the meanings of words and the definitions of words are being changed all around us. They're shimmering in front of our eyes like heat haze or a mirage. And if we don't pin them down now and remind ourselves what words actually meant, we won't properly be able to communicate with one another. And that is not a future in which I want to participate.
We're going to take a break. I hope that you find insights within yourself you would like to share with this audience. We have a lot of people who are very insightful. Please give us that call. Oh, and by the way, I was not able, of course, to go to Washington, D.C. to be a part of the rally down there. I wished I could have. I'm finishing up a major article, and I believe it's gone through all the scientific steps. 10 separate scientists that I don't know, have no way of knowing who they are, they reviewed the anti-aging article, and they passed. They said it's good. It can go to publication. So now I can talk about what's in the article. And I will be over the next 2 days. And it'll help people. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you all with us today. I'm Gary Nall. For all of you who went to Washington on Sunday from the Lincoln Memorial to protest the war in Ukraine, thank you. Good for you. For all of you, including all of our listeners down in Washington, D.C., I have a large listenership out of Washington. I have 33,000 people every quarter hour listening on PFW for 36 years. Hopefully many of you also joined that protest. For everyone else, the question is, why didn't you help? Or did you in some way? I couldn't be there because I'm finishing up a documentary that is on deadline. I have to do a lot of editing. It's a powerful film. I haven't spoken about it. I didn't want anyone that I'm interviewing being tried to persuade not to interview, and that's what happens when I say too much on the air. So I'll be premiering it shortly, probably in about 4 weeks. And Woodstock in Manhattan is a fundraiser for BAI, and out on Long Island, Huntington Arts Cinema. Powerful film. I mean, heavyweights. Whoa. Every heavyweight person I could find in the world came in on this subject. So a lot of filming, and it's done. We're just cleaning it up and getting it to a length that we can handle. It's 4 hours long right now. Got to get down to about 2 hours. Anyhow, if you were at the rally and you'd like to call in and tell us what you experienced, please do. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Also, for those of you who are parents, what happens when you ask the school board about what's in the curriculum and why it's there and what right, if any, you have? Because school boards in many places don't believe you have any rights, and the government doesn't want you to have rights. They want to become the parent. And I have a lot of problems with that. What are your thoughts? Give us a call. And I thought what Neil Oliver had to say made a lot of sense. We're going to go to Gerald Celante here in a moment, because Gerald was down there. There were a lot of speakers. I mean, a lot. About three and a half hours to 4 hours worth of speakers. And they all had something, I think, of value to share, but they all didn't light up the crowd. Gerald did, and Jimmy Dore did. The rest, according to a friend of mine who was there, came down from Manhattan to see it. It was not impressive. What I thought would be something that would rally people nationwide, because all these people had podcasts, so the information about the event was out, but only about under 3,000 people attended. Wow, that's a tiny group. So why? Why are so few people willing to share their thoughts on why we shouldn't be in Ukraine. And that was a chance to do it. All the speakers did. They covered all the bases, but the people weren't there. What does that tell you? So when someone says to me, Gary, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future? For me, I'm very optimistic because I know where I'm going to be. I plan for eventualities. Friends and others I know are also making plans for the future, best places to live. The intentional communities, yeah, we're, a lot of us are okay. And yet I just saw all these new huge $100 million complexes going up in Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach. We're not talking about one building or two. We're talking about dozens of buildings and going for very high-end dollars, Miami. And yet you don't see anyone engaging in any precautionary principles. First, do no harm in medicine, but also don't be foolish. Make the right choice. And by the way, I just saw that a network just did a show on over the internet talking about how Lake Mead and Lake Powell, the two sources, the two first and second largest reservoir in the United States, above ground, you have underground reservoirs and aquifers. The largest is half empty, but these are going dry and what they're calling dead pools, 12 to 24 months. Now, what are the 40 million people who rely upon that water and 7 million people relying upon electricity going to do about it? Right now, nothing. And then I wanted to look further. I said, who's using all this water? 80% minimum of all the water that goes through the Hoover Dam goes for agricultural irrigation. Okay, what's the worst possible crop you could grow in Arizona if you're in a dry place? Cotton. What are they growing? Cotton. So it's a different way of knowing. At some point, you either choose to change and recreate yourself and what you're doing in a different location that is sustainable and not hostile to you, or you succumb to going broke. So since we have so many wonderful places in the United States that have abundant rain and aquifers and good soil, why not start moving from these farms in Arizona and Utah and Nevada and move them to a place it is? Now, I certainly think that that would be smart, and I believe that the government helping state and federal government to move, to relocate farms, that would save 80% of the water. 80%. And then changing from green grass to desert flora and fauna. Cactus, beautiful gardens you can make with without grass. So there's a lot we can do, but you have to have the public saying, I'm in, sure, I don't mind. You know, if it's going to save a lot of people, a lot of misery, then let's do it before the crisis happens. We haven't done anything. Nope, no one's going to suggest the obvious, Occam's razor. Use the razor, cut through the fat, get to the meat. The simplest answer is almost always the best. Move. Instead of taking the most easiest choice, move, we make it the most difficult. No, I'm not going to move. I just moved here. I just moved to this high desert area in Idaho. Why? Well, because of the beauty. But there's no water, and you're going to run out of Lake Mead that supplies you with water. Well, not now. I mean, the developer, you know, sold all of us these $1.5 million homes with 12 golf courses. Yeah, those golf courses require an enormous amount of water. I'm not paying attention to that. I'm paying attention to my comfort. I see. So you're just another self-absorbed, selfish, self-centered person. Doesn't care about the world you live in, your community, or anything else. In fact, most people don't even care about their health, or they wouldn't let it go. That's intentional. That's not unintentional for most illnesses. You have to work on it. You have to work on disease before it manifests. But we don't like to have that conversation. It makes us feel bad. In a woke society, can't say anything makes anyone feel bad. Well, stuff that. I'm going to say whatever has to be said. I don't really care who disagrees with it. You're not going to help someone. Imagine someone comes to me. Gary, I was told you could help me. Hopefully I can. what's your condition? Not sure. Well, what are the symptoms? What were you told? Well, they didn't really want to tell me. They didn't want to hurt my feelings, make me feel scared. So I've just got something wrong. Okay, have you had MRIs, blood tests, x-rays? You must have a diagnosis. There's a diagnosis somewhere, but they chose not to tell me. Well, how can I help you if I don't know the problem? Well, I don't know. Well, I need to know the problem. That's true of everything else in life. Know the problem without a political reference framed around it, and you can find relatively simple solutions. Whether you choose those solutions, that's a different matter. That depends upon how maladaptive, dysfunctional you are, except for the public where you can manifest full functionality, but be completely in chaos emotionally. We've seen enough of that in our society. So your thoughts. I'd like to hear what you have to say. And I'm also interested in those who went to the Sunday rally and those who didn't. But while you're thinking about that, one person who did go, and we have a short clip, is Rage Against the War Machine rally, is our own Gerald Salante. Here's Gerald.
I don't know if it was Jesus, Muhammad, or Buddha, but one of them said, you better boogie before the lights go out because tomorrow is iffy. And boy, is it iffy. Rage against the war machine. Rage, I looked up what it means, to show that you are very angry about something or someone. He raged against the injustice of all. And that's what it is, anger. I am angry. And he who is not angry when there is just cause for anger is immoral. Why? Because anger looks to the good of justice. And if you can live amid injustice without anger, you are immoral as well as unjust. That was from St. Thomas Aquinas. Joe Biden, that guy, you know? He says he's a practicing Catholic. And then I don't know what Prince of Peace he looks up to, man. But hey, how about what St. Thomas Aquinas says? Now, there's a guy that loved every war, and he's a few years older than me, and was a draft dodger in Vietnam. All of these little tough guys with a pair of cojones smaller than a mothball that love to send people to go die. How about Bill Clinton? Every time he got caught with his pants down, it's bombs away over Baghdad. How about the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner, Barack Obama? I want that guy to sort out of there. No, no, you have to say it properly, Salenti. You said it like you're an Italian. Assad has to go. Gaddafi has to go. We have to murder all of these people all over the world. And I'm going to bring the troop surge in, and I'll win a Nobel Peace Prize. But you have to do it properly. You have to keep saying folks, folks, folks. And that's all he did was focus. I am angry at the mainstream media prostitutes. These little media whores that get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and their government whoremasters. All they do is keep selling war, hate, fear, and hysteria. They ban us who speak for peace, love, facts and freedom. The big story, making the news. Vice President Kamala Harris announced that the United States formally determined that Russia committed crimes against humanity. Hey, Harris, did you like the Iraq War? How many people did Ms. Stein say America's killed? How about those crimes against humanity? And where's the Cartoon News Network, CNN? Oh, showing everything, the crap spewing out of Kamala's mouth, but never showed every day of Americans being slaughtering people all over Iraq. They never showed the Americans' 20-year war in Afghanistan, slaughtering people every day. But every day they have the Ukraine war. Every day they're media pimps. I am angry. Thank you. Yep. Because anger looks toward the good of justice. And the congressional crime syndicate running and ruining America by their constant...
Okay. That was Gerald. Not as fiery as he normally is. You know, for those of us who have a 4-6-cylinder car, we get good mileage. Gerald's got a 24-cylinder car under the hood. And people love that. They needed to hear that. The rest of it was very tame by comparison. Your turn to talk back. Let's hear from Tina. Tina, your turn. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I went to Kingston, and you were great in Kingston. And everybody, that rally was not even broadcast on the mainstream media. How unconscionable is that? You know? But I love that clip you just played. And Neil Oliver and all that you do is great. And I say, you know, only peace is safe and effective. We'd have to ban these shots and ban all. I wish you would rebroadcast those speeches throughout the day or the evening. You know, they are really, I like the speech by Gerald Celente. I thought it was great. Somebody's got to say the truth.
Tina, that was only 5 minutes because we don't have a lot of time and we're coming up to the end of the hour for BAI. So we're going to continue with other calls. Go to prn.live, prn.live. And again, I won't be on BAI tomorrow. I'll be on PRN tomorrow at noon. And I won't be on there Wednesday, unfortunately, because the station needs help. And we're doing all we can. I'm coming up with a new premium. But you can all help BAI by calling in and becoming a buddy. Here's the number, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Become a BAI buddy because they can't even make payroll. So you know where this is going, don't you? Can't make payroll, and they've all decided, well, it's either KPFK or BAI has to go so that they can sell the license and therefore fund and the other stations. Well, for those of us who don't want to see BAI off the air, we have to support it as much as we can. Thank you very much, Tina. And for BAI, we'll see you on Thursday. Now, let's go over and let's say hello to Rob from New York. Hi, Rob. You're on the air. It's your turn.
Yes, hello. I was in D.C. yesterday, and I thought the speeches were very good. Chris Hedges spoke very well. Jill Stein spoke well. Ron Paul Institute of Freedom, their various members spoke well. There's just so much you can say about the war that people are either hearing or they're not hearing, and it's pretty frustrating that there were only like 3,000 people there when there should have been hundreds of thousands of people. I believe it was Gerald Celente who in the past has said that these speeches in front of the Capitol January 6th, which I attended as well as Gerald Celente's Peace and Freedom 2020 and 2023. I was there July 23rd, and I heard you speak. And there's just so much you can do. The politicians are there, but they're not paying attention because at the end of the day, we're gone, and we're just a memory. It's quite sad that people don't sit in, people don't demonstrate, people don't form their little tent cities to force the issue. And at the end of the day, we're all gone, and the politicians are safe and effectively bought by their owners, the big corporations and all. It's pretty disgusting what these politicians do. Anyway, okay, that's about
Rob,
it.
Let's look at this a little differently, all right? Follow me on this. The last time a group of individuals, soldiers from World War I, decided to protest the lack of benefits, the lack of compensation for their injuries, they did a tent city in Washington, D.C. The outcome was that he brought in the troops and they forcibly got these people, a lot were arrested, hurt. That's how the government has responded and would today. Here's the good news in this. Let's look for something out of this. First of all, it showed you the people who, all the speakers had something positive to say. Not all of them were as charismatic, but they had something to say. No one is ever as articulate as Chris Hedges. But he's been here many times at different rallies. Last time I rallied with Chris and I did a rally together down at Union Square, and it was against corporatization. And we marched across the street, and we made a circle, arms linked, and willing to get arrested in front of Bank of America to show our protest. We all of our talks, Chris and I, we talked about all the things that were wrong. We had 8,000 people from my radio audience alone there that day. In fact, it was supposed to be broadcast live by BAI, but of course, BAI being what it is, someone forgot to tell the engineers, so no engineer showed up. It wasn't broadcast, not the first time. But the people were there. The people were there. And remember, our march against Monsanto, millions were there. So don't look at how few people were there as what the outcome will be, because each and every one of those people have their own channels or their own podcasts or their own venues. And they'll start writing about this and broadcasting about this. And then other people who may not have been able to come because of limitations, maybe they didn't have the budget to come or other responsibilities. So let's not blame them. Let's just say that there are multiple ways to become informed. Already that lecture that was done yesterday, or a series of lectures, has gained 73,000 viewers on the internet. So you see, it's spreading. And what the establishment hopes is that if they don't get any attention, they didn't, then it will stop. But it won't. And so the good news is that we are empowering people who no longer want to be empowered and directed and controlled by the institutions they grew up trusting and authorities they grew up trusting and personalities they grew up trusting. When Sean Penn, an outstanding actor, by the way, I've really enjoyed his acting over the years, but when he gives his loans, his Oscar to Zelensky, and then does a documentary that is all one-sided, but he'll get that widely distributed and it will be heavily promoted because the deep state's going to be behind that and the establishment's behind it, because it reinforces their singular message, their monotheistic mindset, that it's a good war to fight. We need to fight it. All over liberal media, you see the same thing. It's an important fight. Now there are calls to have United States troops in there. There are calls for airplanes going in there. So it's not, are we pushing a conflict? We need this conflict. The military industrialization, corporate interests need this conflict. They have trillions of dollars at stake, just like the vaccine makers needed to sell the vaccines. Whether or not the vaccines worked or not was a secondary issue. In fact, they never even tested for it, we found out. They did no testing to prove that you wouldn't spread the vaccine, spread the virus or contract the virus or be hospitalized. That was never tested for. We didn't know that. We assumed that something was wrong, but we didn't know how bad it was until in front of the European Union, one of the presidents of one of the Pfizer's divisions said, no, we never tested for that. Wow. Then why is it everyone in the media, every single person in the government, said, get the vaccine from the President of the United States and everyone else, and you will not end up getting the virus and you won't spread it. None of that was true. So how many times do you have to be lied to before you realize you've got the wrong source of information? Now people are shifting to other sources, and that's good. So let's be patient, because come this summer, we're going to do another rally up in Kingston, but a different type. I'm going to run this one, and we're going to do it with Zoom all over the world. So an enormous audience can tune into it. And we'll have the people who've shown by their credibility, by their determination, and by their commitment that they have something to say and the world needs to hear it. So we're just at the first round. Remember Zolu, The Art of War, 500 BC. Choose your battles carefully, because you can lose a battle and win the war, but you have to be extremely patient. You have to outsmart the person that you're up against. And we have to be smarter. We have to have coalitions working together, even if ideologically or politically they're on different sides of an issue. Set those things aside, because when we start working together, it makes it more difficult for them to silence all of us. And we got to thank Elon Musk for buying Twitter, $54 billion, because bad business investment, but boy, it liberated us to know the truth of how corrupt everything is. Thank you very much for going down there, Rob, and we hopefully will hear from you again. We're out of time, everyone, and the good news is that coming up now is Eutrice Lead. She's live, and she's got her phone, and she's got a whole lot of new interesting topics she's going to be discussing and talking about and getting a lot of people involved in the issues. Now over to Eutrice Lead.